This is session 4 of the PDH online course, Modern Closed Circuit Television Design. In this session, we're going to speak of video controls, including sequential switchers, quad multiplexers, video loop-through arrangements, graphic system requirements, simple system examples, and complex system examples. Many, many years ago, camera gain and white balance were controlled remotely by an operator. The automatic controls, however, today are so good that they're built into the camera and often not even available at setup time. Video controls in this course refer to display controls, including sequential switchers, multiplexers, loop-through and termination, and distribution amplifiers. They will be addressed individually. In this discussion, analog camera refers to the coaxial analog signal. The controls were formerly mechanical and electromechanical, as identified by the bright flash on the screen when switching. Today, almost all electronic switches with delay lines or digital storage avoid the flashes and picture roll when switching. A sequential switcher goes through a number of cameras in order, presenting video 1, video 2, video 3, video 4, video 1, video 2, video 3, video 4, video 1, all day long with an adjustable delay in between, and typically with lockout so that you can skip a camera that's malfunctioning or you just don't want to look at, and hold so that you can look continuously at a single picture that has something interesting going on. The device permits one screen to display 4, 8, or more images in a sequence. Standard features include lockout, stop continuous, and adjustable dwell time, that's the switching interval. Less common but desirable features are loop through to take the signals from this monitoring station to a recorder or to another monitoring station, and multiple isolated outputs. Also available is a control input so that an external alarm can switch the screen to the image containing the information. A typical unit is illustrated in the written version of this. It's a little box, and it's actually fairly small with the switches on the front where up is hold and down is skip. The one pictured shows 8, 16 is very common, 4 is very common. To my mind, very inexpensive, less than $100 for a 4-channel electronic sequential switchers, maybe up to $200 for a 16-channel. This is a standalone unit. It is not part of another system, which is easily done. You know, once we get the thing in a digital form and we're under software control, this is a very easy feature to implement. But you can buy the box that does just that. So you buy the cameras, you buy the sequential switcher, you buy the monitor, you've got a system ready to go. And it's very economical, very functional. It's wonderful. Let me read you the advertising description for this. This 8-channel sequential switcher offers 8 camera inputs with loop-through outputs and adjustable dwell time. Additional features include sequence spot switchable output. The unit will work with both color and black and white cameras. This reference to color and black and white cameras shows up in some of the advertisements. At the very, very low end, they are not including the band pass to color to transmit the hidden color information. Obviously, black and white is the same as color, and color has the addition of the color information. The reason we know they're the same is because a color signal shows up well on a black and white camera. It's simply unable to process the color information that comes along with it. Well, if you buy the super cheapest device, less than $100, it's rated only for black and white. I'm interested to see what they do on color. They may pass color without any trouble because digital systems tend to be wide band unless you go to some trouble to tailor them and reduce the bandwidth. But there is a difference between the advertisement of a color, which certainly includes black and white, and black and white, which is supposed to exclude color. The literature often refers to quad multiplexers as quad splitters because they split the monitor screen into 4 images from 4 cameras. Multiplexer is a better term because the device actually combines 4 signals into 1 output. Split screen goes with the name quad. A quad is a historic anomaly because it's very easy to put four pictures on one screen, the quad. It's just about as easy to put nine pictures on the screen, three across and three down. It's just about as easy to put 16. If you get a big enough monitor, 16 gives you an awful lot of pictures. Personal recommendation, avoid scanning. I'm using the words wrong. Avoid auto pan cameras with a quad. If one of the pictures is moving, your eye always goes to the one that's moving. If it's moving because of an automatic motor attached to it, there's no reason to look at the one that's moving. It's just your eye is attracted to it. If you use fixed cameras in a quad, the one with motion is the one you should be looking at, and all of the built-in reflexes of the human body work to your favor. A large monitor with a quad replaces four small screens, and with a switch permits selection of a single camera to fill the screen. Once again, the quad has a selection on the front of it if you want to pull up one of the four on to fill the screen. So it's a flexible device. Doesn't have any way to skip one because you've got four slots. If you don't fill one, it's just blank, and there's no difference between blank, blank, and switch it to blank. The reduction in resolution produced by a quad multiplexer, there is a reduction in display resolution in the 4-image mode. As with the sequential switcher, the quad function is often taken on by a DVR, digital video recorder, at a central location. Standalone quad is still very valuable for remote or auxiliary monitoring, or when needs expand to 4 images, but there's no budget for 3 more video cables. We talked about that in the example of replacing a malfunctioning pan-tilt zoom camera with 4 fixed cameras and a quad all located up in the dome on the pendant. There's some similarity between the quad and the IPTV camera server, but the quad loses image information, and the camera server arguably does not. Quad is limited below, and this happens to be what's called a 2-page 8-input quad. So you've got one page that's 4 cameras, and then it's switchable, or it will switch itself if you set it that way, to the second page with another 4 cameras. So you get a total of 8 cameras going to one screen, but it's 4 on the first screen, then it pages to the second screen with a different 4. To my mind, this is confusing. I would hope you could get used to it after a while, but it's not intuitive like a sequential switcher is. It's not intuitive like a quad with 4 displays on it. The description for this quad, which, by the way, is priced at $390 for 8 color cameras, says a quad compresses images from up to 4 cameras and displays all of the images on a monitor screen simultaneously. A quad eliminates the need to have multiple monitors. All 4 cameras can be viewed in quad format as well as individually. Each camera has a push button, which brings that camera into full screen view. Quad can be directly connected to a time-lapse recorder. During playback of the time-lapse recorder, the images will be displayed in the same manner they were recorded. In contrast to a multiplexer, quads do not allow full screen viewing of each camera during playback. So apparently they have a product they call a multiplexer, which has different characteristics. In this particular advertisement, a multiplexer is a hypertext jump. So if that were interesting to you, you could click on that and see what it is they're talking about, a multiplexer. Again, in this particular product with the $390 price tag, simultaneously monitor up to 8 color cameras, real-time quad display, 60 or 50 frames per second. I don't think that's right. I think it's 30 frames per second, 60 fields per second. Sometimes I get confused on this. Television uses a 2-to-1 interlace where there are half screens and then offset just one dot and then another half screen making the full screen. But this is what this says. High resolution broadcast quality. So they're insisting that there is no bandwidth limitation on it. 16 million true colors. So they are doing digital processing, but they're doing high resolution digital processing on the analog input. Option to watch full screen or quadrant picture. Built-in timer and title generator. Ah, title generator. That's nice. Wonder how much you get to program that so it can be your words for what the picture is associated with. Wonder if it has a built-in clock on it so when you're viewing it in playback, you know exactly what you're looking at. auto-sequential switching function, and adjustable dwell time, 1 to 99 seconds. On-screen video loss detection and alarm indicator. Alarm input with built-in buzzer. Independent brightness, contrast, color, tint adjustment for each channel. Playback, zoom, and freeze function. RS-232 remote control. User-friendly front panel design. So this is a humdinger quad. It's a two-page quad. Takes 16 cameras, but only displays them in four image split-screen mode. Analog camera video loop through and termination. This topic has been addressed in several times within articles of this program, but repeated here for ease of location if needed. Ideally, a 75-ohm camera feeds a 75-ohm cable, which is connected to a 75-ohm monitor. In practice, this works well. However, it's common to have need for two monitors. This introduces an impedance mismatch and excessive loading. Again, if we're using a 75-ohm monitor, two 75-ohm monitors is not the same as one 75-ohm monitor. The problem goes away if the middle monitor is invisible. Now, this sounds like magic, and boy, those are sure the words for magic, aren't they? But that's not what's going on. Electronically, you can make a load invisible by giving it infinite impedance, meaning it draws no current off the circuit. It touches the circuit, it senses the circuit, but it draws no current off the circuit. This is called a bridging input. A bridging input is a high impedance tap to the line that does not introduce load or reflections. High-end monitors, sequential switchers, quad multiplexers, and other video control devices have a switched mark bridging terminating. In the bridging input, it is an invisible load. In the terminating input, it's 75 ohms, and it's the one you use as the last one on the video line. Less expensive equipment may have a termination switch, but no output to assist in looping the signal to the next device. A BNC-T is used. One is illustrated in the written version of the course. It has two male connectors, and in the middle, offset 90 degrees, is a female connector. The female connector goes onto the monitor. The incoming coax with the male BNC cooks on one end of the T. The outgoing BNC connector goes on the other end of the T, and it loops through. And in the illustration in the written text, it says it's $1.99. So you may pay $2.50 or $3. It may be a better one, but it's not going to be a $10 device or a $20 device. Analog camera video distribution amplifiers. In broadband community antenna television distribution, distribution amplifiers are used to boost the signal and provide isolation. This has not been commonly done in baseband CCTV distribution. The reason is the differing system architecture. CATV has one source and many, many destinations, all of which are in operation concurrently. CCTV has many sources and essentially one destination. With the addition of redundant digital video recorders, pod and central monitoring points, supervisor monitoring, this analysis becomes faulty, however. Anyway, rather than invest in very complicated technology, distribution amplifiers and crossbar switchers, ITTV uses the local area network as the distribution system. Now, there were a lot of heavy-duty electrical engineering terms in there, and they're not really explained in this course, but they are available for follow-up if you wish. Crossbar switching is something they invented for telephones, and it's just a marvelous concept. It's a many-in, many-out switch, and wherever one of the inputs crosses one of the outputs, you can make a connection there, and that's how the crossbar switcher works. And you can have many of the inputs going into one of the destinations, or many of the inputs going into another, or one going to one. I mean, it's just a very, very flexible thing, and very expensive. Good stuff costs money. What else was mentioned there you might be interested in? Pod and central controls. This course was developed after the design of a prison CCTV system. In a prison, typically, and just almost universally, they have something like 8 cells and a day room that makes up a pod, and there's a control room at the end of the pod where the officer sits behind bulletproof glass watching the inmates doing whatever inmates do, and he goes out and yells at them if they're doing something wrong. this is self-contained. That's the whole concept of the pod. A large prison has more pods. The one we were working on had 4 pods. You can have 8, 16, 32. You can have 2 levels with mezzanines. But it's all based on this pod architecture, which works very, very well. Well, in addition to the pod and the pod control, you have a master control where typically you handle things like prison-wide functions, like the front gate. We talked about in an earlier example, choosing the lens, the processing where they bring the prisoners into the facility and then distribute them to the pods in the cells. So the central facilities come off the master control room, and the master control room also has supervision over the pods. Well, it's a real nice thing to let the pod officer in charge watch what's happening in his pod. It's awfully nice to have central control watch what's happening in the pod. Officer says, I have to go in and talk with prisoner number 2942. Central control watches while he goes in to talk with prisoner 2942. And if anything happens, the officer can hit his duress button on his radio. But before he hits the duress button, the officer in central control is already watching him. So we really do want 2 monitors on 1 camera. And again, for a prison and for the cost involved, it's so wise, record all your cameras all the time. I mean, you spend $5,000 on a digital video recorder and you just record everything. If you don't need it at the end of the month, you start recording over. If something happens during the month, you go back and pull that out and put it on a DVD or a CD or something. But it is just so easy and so simple, except for the fact that now we have a camera, we have 2 monitors, and then we have a digital recorder. And then it starts getting a little more complicated if the supervisor or warden wants to watch what's happening in his prison, which is a reasonable thing for a supervisor or warden to want to do. But the basic problem is, how many times can you loop an analog signal? And one of the answers offered here is IPTV solves this problem by making it a non-problem. You feed all the cameras into your local area network. You pull them off your local area network as you need them. You pull them off in the pod. You pull them off in the central control room. You pull them off for the DVR. You pull them off for the supervisor. You pull them off for the warden. And if you choose, and I'm not recommending this, but if you choose, you can put a firewall into the internet, and authorized persons at home can go in and watch the cameras in the prison. And again, it takes no thinking. This becomes a very, very complicated system with no analysis and design. All you do is you put it into the local area network, you pull it off of the local area network. How does the local area network work? Well, they have these data switches that send things from sources to destinations. Sounds an awful lot like the crossbar switcher we were talking about a moment ago, except it's inherent in a local area network. You don't have to think it through. You just do it, and if it doesn't work, you ask the guy what you should buy to make it work, and he says, data switch. Data switches, now, this is secret and this is not part of security, so just between you and me, data switches are wonderful, wonderful devices. They have a feature that nobody talks about. It's called store and forward. Now, what does that mean? Well, the way a data switch works is any input can be connected to any output. But if you think about it, there's a problem if you get 2 inputs trying to go to the same output. How does this data switch work? Does it tell one of the inputs you're busy, try again later? No. What it does is it stores the data, and at the end of the first message, it puts out the second message. Now, this gives you the opportunity to have 16 or 32 cameras operating in real time with no skew. Skew is a time delay in sequential devices. Like a lot of times in electronic devices, they'll have 1 analog to digital input, but they'll have 6 inputs. Well, how do you do 6 inputs into 1 analog to digital? Well, you do the first one, the second one, the third one. But you have a delay between the first one and the second one and the third one. Not so with a digital data switch. When it comes in, it is stored. As soon as the destination channel is open, it passes through. And if the packet is time date stamped, as it better be for something like this, they come through looking like simultaneous. If they're on the hard disk, they have the same time date stamp, even though they came through serially on the data pipe. Data switch has some other characteristics. They're just wonderful, just phenomenal. Current, low-cost data switches. I mean, we're talking $200 here for a $200 for a 24-channel data switch with a gigabit upload channel. That means you go buy a compact computer, compact brand, that has a built-in gigabit data connection. This is a $1,000 device, a compact computer with a built-in gigabit data connection. Connect it to a $200 24-channel data switch with built-in store and forward capability and the gigabit output, and you got 24 channels going into a high-speed pipe. I mean, it's just unreal what you can do with this. If you're interested in the IPTV, it solves a lot of problems with no design effort whatsoever. Let's read about this. 6 100 megabit LAN branches, each containing 6 cameras, so that's 36 cameras, can feed a $200 10 100 1000 data switch, which uplinks into the gigabit network interface on a $1000 compact server. The server supports an outboard $1000 terabyte RAID storage appliance. Also, $2,000 plus software buys a fully redundant online server. What's going on here? At the prison, we want to record 24/7. So we're going to buy one of these nice gadgets. Well, we're spending $250,000. We're going to buy two of these gadgets. They have some trouble with one of them. They can fuss around with it all they want. They've still got 24/7 archival data storage. Wow. Analog camera video system graphics. Many CCTV designers grew up from audio-visual system design, you know, amplifiers and speakers kind of stuff. Audio-visual suppliers give the designers graphic packages with symbols and part numbers for proprietary devices. The designers can prepare a system design rapidly and have a bill of materials to price out for their quotation. The results are very graphic, but not very communicative system drawings. Again, they use the specialized symbols that this vendor likes for his proprietary device. It's clearly identified with the part number. It is not clearly identified with the function it provides. It tells you what kind of proprietary cable to hook up at each end. It doesn't tell you what kind of Belden cable to hook up at each end. Now, the good news about this is you can sit down and in 15 minutes you can have a complete design with a price on it. The bad news is it is proprietary. It only works from the vendor who provided the design package. A recommended alternative is to draw your diagram using boxes and labels. Don't try to make a picture of a digital video recorder. Don't try to make a picture of a camera. Don't try to make a picture of a switch. Put a box and say switch. Put a box and say DVR. Put a box and say camera. Now, really, I like to put a little lens on the end of the thing because it helps on the plan drawings which way you want to point it. But again, the basic idea is boxes and switches. If there's a wire connecting the camera to the switch, put in the Belden part number. Now, that doesn't mean you have to buy the cable from Belden, but that means everybody knows exactly what cable you want. If you want a plenum jacket on it, the Belden part number identifies the plenum jacket. If you want a Siamese with the power conductors under the same jacket, you use a Belden part number for a Siamese. Now, again, I would recommend you put the Belden part number and you say Siamese. So we are communicating to the guy who has to install it. But when he says, this is what I'm going to install, you check it with the Belden part number, or he shows you the catalog page saying identical to Belden part such and such. Westpen is the other premium cable supplier that is recommended for defining the connections between devices. A recommended alternative is to use boxes and labels. Not so pretty, but much more communicative. Keyed notes, a number in a circle pointing to an object and the same number in a circle with text on the page, further improves communication. These keyed notes let you put any message to the installer you want to put on the sheet. And you don't have to clutter up the sheet with long paragraphs. Put the long paragraphs along one border with a keyed note. Note number six, use varifocal lens, necessarily include 75 millimeter. Okay? And whatever you want to say to the installer, you can put in the keyed note and tell him exactly where it applies. And I have examples in the written text. And I spent some effort on preparing these, so I'm going to try to convey them to you orally. The first one is the one we've talked about again and again and again. You should be able to draw it in your mind without any assistance. There's a camera. The camera is hooked up to a power supply. The power supply is hooked up to a nearby 120-volt receptacle circuit. This is not the one I'm recommending, but this is where it all starts. The camera is hooked up by a video cable back to a screen. The most simple analog CCTV system: camera, power supply, video cable, screen. This is the one we talked about in the church or the public hall where too many people come for the meeting. Or, you know, it's just quick and dirty. It works. If you put it in nicely, it's quick and permanent, and it works. Simple analog sequencer TV. Exactly the same drawing, except in this case, the camera 1 and camera 2 both go in to a sequencer. The sequencer has to have some power for it also, and it feeds a single signal to the screen. That's the sequencing switch. The most simple analog switch is exactly, identically the same picture. Two cameras go into a quad multiplexer with its own power supply, go into a screen that's split into four different images. And that's all there is. In the simple sense, you have all the concepts necessary for analog CCTV design. Now, in this series, the next one is entitled More Complicated, More Simple, Analog Sequential Quad DVR CCTV Design. What's going on? We have substituted a DVR for the sequential switch and the quad switch. Most DVRs, it's built into it. Once again, a DVR is a personal computer with special software on it. $200, $400, $1,000 software, but it's still a standard Dell or Compaq computer or whatever brand you prefer. We have eliminated the field power supplies by using Siamese cable. So each camera has a video signal going out. It has a power signal, power source going out of it, but it loops back in to the cable going back to the control point. So in this drawing, we have two cameras with Siamese cables going back to the DVR. The power is split off from the Siamese at the DVR, goes into a central power supply. Again, we're talking 12 volts DC. And the 12-volt DC power supply is connected up to a local UPS. The DVR is connected to a local UPS. The screen is connected to a local UPS. The UPS is connected to a nearby 120-volt receptacle. Be careful if you choose to buy an uninterruptible power source. They do exactly what they do. They may not do what you expect them to do. What a UPS is intended to do is give you a graceful shutdown of your computer system. It is not intended to continue operating your computer system. If you read the specifications, they are almost all 10-minute UPS. That's supposed to give you time to store everything to hard disk, and when it shuts down, nothing gets lost. That's probably not what you want. I mean, yes, you want to watch what's happening during the disturbance. You want to save the images of what happened during the disturbance. But you'd kind of like to record what happens until the power returns. So a UPS is a very valuable contribution. And again, these things cost $100 or a real nice one for $400. UPS is easy to put in and provides a lot of value, but only 10 minutes backup time. And the prices start going up very, very rapidly if you want a half-hour backup time or if you want 24 hours backup time. Matter of fact, on the recent job we were doing, it was just physically impossible to buy enough batteries for 24 hours backup. We ended up putting a generator outside because you can get a manual generator for less than $1,000. Keep it in the garage so it doesn't get rained on. And if you need it, you go out and pull a rope on it, and you can run your security system as long as you want. Now, the UPS question is a major question with no good answers. The reason is the utilities keep quoting statistics that they only have momentary power interruptions. The statistics are historically valid, but are they valid for the future? Is the future going to contain more August 2003 Northeast power interruptions for 3 days or 10 days? Or is the future going to contain multiple less than 1 second interruptions? The less than 1 second interruptions are handled very well by conventional UPS, the commodity device you buy at any computer store or appliance store. The extended interruptions require the presence of a generator that works the day you need it. And a generator that works the day you need it is a non-trivial undertaking. So you make your own decision. Recognize the factors that are upon you. Now, a complex video switcher arrangement is where we started out on this prison I was telling you about a moment ago. We've got four pods, each with four cameras, coming into a sequential switcher. So there are four sequential switchers here. Each of the switchers goes into a quad multiplexer. So in the central control room, they have four images. The four images keep flashing continuously between the different cameras on the different pods. Now, this will drive you nuts. I mean, this is not a good solution. Nobody could stand there and watch that. I mean, you just couldn't tolerate it. So what you do is you sequence through one of the pods, decide which camera you like, and then you put it on hold. So you have four fixed pictures on the quad in the master control room, and everything's keen. In this particular design, we teed off the output from the sequential switcher and sent it back to the pod. So the pod officer sees the same thing the central officer sees. He says he's going out to the day room. You punch up the day room. He sees on his screen that you're watching the day room. He goes out there and does his stuff in the day room. And he calls back, everything's fine. And maybe they loop through and want to watch what's happening in the visitation area. The flexibility of this is that the pod officer gets pretty much to decide what he wants. The central officer monitors and supervises what he's got. You do not have access to all cameras at all times. You have to fool with the sequential switchers. You have to fool with the quad multiplexer. But you can get at everything you've installed. A fairly nice mechanical system. Some limitations, but kind of intuitive. You don't have to train somebody how to use it. This button goes with this picture, and it works. This started growing and started getting more complicated and eventually outgrew a mechanical solution. The growth that took place was, how do you hook it up to the digital recorder? So you got to tee off again. So we teed off of the 16 cameras before they went into the sequential switchers, put them in DVR. Yeah, it's keen. Works fine. DVR is a good box. Everything's fine. Well, the commissioner wants to view it in his office, not in the security room. So now we've got to tee off of the DVR and send it to the commissioner. And then if we can arrange it, he'd sure like if his supervisor, the jail commander, could check into the screens too. So we're getting like six tees off of video line. That's a bad idea. You've just got a low reliability installation where you've got six tees off of it, and you're counting on everything to be terminated properly, and just bad, bad, bad. We kind of junked this and went to the IPTV solution, which is related in a few minutes. But it's the one we just talked about, where all the cameras go into the local area network. All the cameras come off by anybody that's connected to them. The pod camera is connected to them. It is configured so that the pod can only view the pictures from that pod. Now, that's part of the password and privilege and all that stuff associated with the viewing software. The central control room has access to all the cameras. The supervisor has access to all the cameras. The commissioner has access to all the cameras. But being software, it can be reconfigured as you wish. If for some reason you don't want people to have access to one of the cameras, you don't. By the way, in our state law forbids taking pictures of people in the bathroom, but people walk around naked when they come out of their shower and go back to their bed in the dormitory. Well, we're allowed to view the dormitory. Do you want to see people walking naked through the dormitory? So you may lock out those pictures except for people that have a good reason to see them. Pod B, the women's dormitory, the officer in charge there should be able to see what's happening in the dormitory. There's no reason Pod A should be able to see that. Or even central control room, you have to decide. You want central control room looking in the women's dormitory? Maybe yes, maybe no, a local decision. Do you want the jail commander, do you want the commissioner to be able to look in? And you decide what you want and you program it in. On the subject of monitors, we will start a new session. So right now we're going to conclude session 4 on video controls and reconvene again for session 5 on monitors.